This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hi there. So, do you want to read Marvel? You came to the right place. We're a brand new podcast centered on Korean entertainment, mainly manhwa, that might also have novel or drama sources and adaptations. For the past few years, comics as a medium have completely blown up internationally, and manhwa is no exception. With the advent of new print publishers like Ice Press and Webtoon and other digital distributors aiming for a piece of the pie, we have more content than ever available internationally, so it feels like the perfect time to dive into this medium. My name is Marion, and I'll be your host, along with my friend Amber. What's up, Amber?
Hey, everyone.
Nice. And I figured it's the right time. There's so much manhwa out there right now, and like everyone's like really enjoying it, and I don't have enough people to talk to about it, so I wanted to make a podcast about it. And I'm so glad that you could join me for this.
I'm happy to be here. Anytime I go to the bookstore or even just like browsing digital books now, I see manhwa everywhere. And I'm excited to see it grow as a medium and uncover so many stories that I wouldn't have had access to before.
Good. Because I'm an omnivore and I've read so much. I've been like neck deep in this since pandemic started. I guess we could talk about like how we got into these kind of comics. But I think it was like in the summer of 2020 where I was furloughed from my old job. I was a server at a Japanese restaurant, which like, if I wasn't furloughed, I would have probably by now been like an interpreter for like United Nations or some shit, but maybe not at that level, but like I was doing shit.
You were going places. I believe in you. You would have been a great, not a UN interpreter.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I honestly, I'm kind of tight, but it's fine. instead, in that downtime while I was looking for more jobs, I was like, I retreated into my hole reading manhwa and novels, a lot of light novels. And I found out about like official digital publishers like Tabbytoon, Tapas, Webtoon. And I was just like, all right. Let's see what this is about. I saw that there were a lot of, I guess the equivalent of shoujo or like comics aimed at girls. And I'm just like, oh yes, I'm in the mood for like some fantasy romance. And like, I think like,
I love that you use that term all the time. Romanticy.
Yeah. I got it from Heidi McDonald from Comics Feed. And, it's so, so good. It's like the perfect popcorn food for me. What's funny is that like I think like 50% of them that I read were all like isekai adjacent, where it's like, oh, it's someone died and went into like the world of a novel or an otome game or whatever, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm eating this up. I think the first one I read was something that's getting an anime adaptation right now. It's why Ray Liana ended up at the Duke's Mansion. So I got to check that out because I have it on my queue, but I just haven't had time.
But, I haven't checked that one out either, but I do think a lot of people are relating to isekai so much, at least in, like since the pandemic, just because life is hard enough and we'd all love to just like escape it and start over somewhere else.
So true. Oh my God. Especially when like when you get into like our age and we're, you know, like working, not in school anymore. Yeah. And like half of them are just like, yes, the overworked salaryman or like office worker or secretary or whatever, and they're just like, yeah, life sucks, and then you get hit by a truck or whatever.
Oh no, not truck food.
You're right, and you just end up in another world. Like, yeah, sometimes you might need that. but like it just from there it just exploded. I feel, because I read a lot of action stuff. One of the series we're going to talk about today is like, I think probably the biggest breakout hit we've seen. It's spoilers. It's Solo Leveling. It's probably a new episode title. But yeah, how did you get into manhwa, Amber?
Yeah, so my first foray with manhwa is actually before I even got into manga because I didn't know any better. Yeah, even though I'm a huge manga nerd, my first book was actually manhwa for as far as reading Japanese or Korean comics. And that was actually Fairy's Landing that was published out by Tokyo Pop.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, it's so old now, but the at least in terms of like literary world, it's old. It's not really that old. But they never finished publishing that series, and I'll never forgive Tokyo Pop for that. Or the author, I guess. But
there are many reasons to not forgive Tokyo Pop. That's just one of them.
Yes, that's just one. But so, I mean, at the time, I didn't know it was a manhwa. I didn't know the difference between these books. I was just getting into it in like middle school or something. But after that, I didn't really know much about any sort of Korean comics until the last, like, I want to say a couple of years. I got a lot more invested into it. And that's really thanks to like some really good targeted ads, as well as a friend telling me about Solo Leveling at just like a random party one day. He's like, you have to read this. You have to read it right now. And I'm like, I will get to it eventually. And I finally did. But I mostly have read a lot of manga titles and then things that have been put out in physical print more recently.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, big ups to your friend. And also, I have also noticed a lot more like targeted ads, actually, like especially like on mobile.
Yes. Instagram actually has my number.
Yeah, Instagram. Holy shit. I got so many. I got Tapas and Manta ads, which is really funny because like I feel like out of all of the ads I've seen, only like maybe three of them were actually series that I haven't already read, which is like maybe yeah. I'm doing something right. I'm reading all the ones that are getting
That's exactly what happened to me is I saw an ad on Instagram from Manta for Under the Oak Tree, and I was just blown away by the art, and I'm like, I have to see what this is about. And I'm like, oh well, it's a webcomic ad, I can at least just like test the sample for it. And then I saw how cheap the subscription was and like sold, and it's just been all in from there.
Nice. Yeah, I think that was the first Manta title I read. It was, yeah, the art is gorgeous, and I kept up with it because I really like the story and the characters. Yeah, we'll probably cover that in another episode, but yeah, I think if you haven't already started reading manhwa and you're into comics, like, what are you doing? Just jump in. There's so much out there, and so this podcast, we're gonna put out episodes monthly. Well, we're gonna aim for that, and then we're gonna probably go back and forth between like something named like male audience and female audience. So like this is the first inaugural episode. We're gonna do the biggest webcomic out there, and it's probably Solo Leveling is probably that, right? That's one of the biggest action comics I've seen. So and then for our next episode, it's gonna be a business proposal, which is a romance, not fantasy, set in real life.
Not fantasy.
And it's about office workers. We'll discuss that later, but yeah, I think there's a really healthy variety of stuff to read out there, and we just want to talk more about it. And I'm sure a lot of you out there probably like me, where you might not have people to talk about it with, so yeah, you can listen to us chatting. You can talk to us. You can send us emails, whatever. We opened up an email and a Twitter and everything. If you have any suggestions or any comments or whatever, just send them our way. We'll read them. Maybe we'll talk about them. Depends. But yeah. So I guess we can just go right into Solo Leveling, or how the YouTuber influencers go, Solo Leveling. But yeah, what is Solo Leveling? Well, I just said it. It's an action/fantasy global sensation. It centers on Sung Jin-woo, who is a hunter. He's an F-rank hunter, I think. Basically, there are people who awakened around the world after the appearance of these like dimensional rifts called dungeons, right? And basically, like people like awaken powers and they get like measured and evaluated to see like how strong they actually are. And depending on like their power level or whatever, they get approved to enter dungeons and fight monsters and basically like protect humanity, sort of. Like you have to clear dungeons, otherwise the monsters can like overflow and like invade the real world. So everyone is trying to prevent that. But as you'll see in the series, there's a lot of escalation when it comes to these monsters and like the threat of these like dungeon overflows just keeps expanding. And stuff happens. Sung Jin-woo actually is he's like weak or whatever. He's not really like successful at his job, but he has to do it to survive. He doesn't have like a steady job. He's trying to provide for to keep his mom like being treated at a hospital because she actually has something. Is it called like dungeon sickness or
it's,
whatever?
The eternal slumber.
Right. Eternal slumber. So I think it was caused by like exposure to like mana or like energy from like these dungeons and rifts and stuff, and like other people around like exuding like this force or whatever, and I guess it made her sick, and she's been in like a permanent coma basically. And he's just trying to keep her alive. His dad is nowhere to be seen. It seems like he disappeared a long time ago. And yeah, he lives a pretty rough life for the most part. But everything changes in the first chapter or first arc, where he enters a dungeon which is like originally classified as like a low rank dungeon, but it's actually a double dungeon, which means that there's like another dungeon inside, which like the difficulty completely ramps up, and there's like they encounter like these ominous statues with like writings and stuff, and like they have to basically solve a puzzle to escape or whatever. But it turns out that like it was really just a trap, they end up escaping. He's like raiding with a group of people, of other hunters, and there are casualties. A lot of people die in this series. There's a lot of
no one is too. Safe.
Yeah, no one is safe except maybe the main character because of plot armor. But something happens and he unlocks something which is like it's like a system where it's almost like a UI that shows up, and it shows him like progression, and he's the only one who's aware of this or like goes through this, and he can level up basically and get stronger. And it's because like he survived the temple. Is it called like the Cartanon temple or something?
Yeah.
And he gets like a blessing from the evil god or whatever that was like threatening them. And so he does the one punch man routine, which is like 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, run 10k a day or whatever. And his body automatically like purifies poisons and stuff, so he can't even get drunk. But he ends up recovering, becoming way stronger over time. Like his body adjusts and like he gets beefier. He was like such a scrawny little kid, but then like it's almost like a chatification where he gets like stronger, more handsome and everything, and everyone's like, who's this Sung Jin-woo guy? He looks so different.
But he's still like in high school and he looks like he's in his like late 20s.
Right? He looks like a CEO.
Yeah.
And basically the story is just seeing the progression of Sung Jin-woo getting stronger and basically like getting embroiled in politics when it comes to like I guess like hunter society and like the organizations, and like other countries are involved as well, like the US, China, like different like S-class hunters versus like the highest rank. We get to see them over time, and because like Jin-woo isn't like immediately like super busted, he gets to go like under the radar for a bit, but things do catch up to him, and like his strength becomes like too big to ignore. Like he's just that necessary to save and like protect Korea from like this existential threat of monsters. And honestly, going to like the next thing, like what's the appeal? One of the biggest appeals, I think, of Solo Leveling, besides just like the artwork is amazing, super detailed and easy to follow, in my opinion. Like there's a lot of action series that might feel like clunky or cluttered, or like the choreography is kind of sucks. I'm looking at Tokyo Ghoul. But one of the biggest appeals besides the art is like it's very, very simple, easy to follow. And it does the DBZ thing where it's just like, okay, we beat the bad guy. Next arc, we fight a stronger bad guy. And then like seeing like progressively as he levels up, like tackling more powerful enemies and like, oh, how's he gonna handle this one now? It's very entertaining. I feel like that stretch from like the first like 100 chapters, I think, before the season one ends, is just like him gradually just like tackling like harder threats, and like as he grows more confident and more comfortable in like his own body and like with his powers and stuff, seeing how he like tackles these threats is like so fun. I feel like it's really good. I think at some point it turns into him just like curb stomping people, but there's still the satisfaction of him having to put up a fight against the final bosses of each arc. And yeah, like I don't know, that's what I enjoyed the most, to be honest. Is there something that really appealed to you in particular?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to love about Solo Leveling. Once I finally got to reading it and then reading all of it that is currently available, it became clear to me that it's so much more than just the gorgeous art that already is. I think like seeing Hunter Sung like in his element, starting as just a classy hunter, which by the way, classy hunters are just, they're barely above a normal person. Like
right.
They can use maybe a tiny fraction of mana, but they're like a normal person practically.
Yeah.
And just so like, yeah, like seeing that transformation of him, I get that it follows kind of like a similar trope to a lot of like Japanese shonens where you have to just keep like fighting a harder and harder boss until you get strong enough to be the best or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there's so much that happens that is surprising that it doesn't quite follow that storyline at the same time. Like, for example, there'll be parts where you'll expect him to like have a hard time and fail, and he'll just walk up with his newfound confidence and decimate this villain. And you're like, well, that was a short boss fight, but I'm here for it. Yeah. And like, there's plenty of moments like that throughout the series that just surprise you. And characters that you wouldn't quite expect to be the way that they are, that will also take you by surprise throughout the whole story. I think that it's very well told and incredibly well illustrated. And that's mm-hmm. very much a kudos to Dubo or Redice Studio.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like also there's a lot of like emotional intelligence in the writing when it comes to like how he interacts with people. Like, yeah, to start with, like, he's very vulnerable, very weak, and like taken advantage of all the time just because he's so weak. But then like as he gets stronger, he gets more stoic, and like, yeah, that can be a little boring, but also like he treats people, he has this thing where like I feel like a lot of main characters in like action manhwa either like become like really like they're like super assholes, or like they're just like tied up in like revenge stories and stuff. But what he does is like he takes the approach of like, oh, an eye for an eye, tooth for two. So people who treat him like shit, he'll treat them like shit backwards. And that's really satisfying. But then like for people who treat him with kindness and respect, like he does the same. Like there's I forgot her name, but the girl who was the healer who was with him in the first dungeon, she gets like traumatized. She has like PTSD over the event, and like she can't go into dungeon raids anymore, even though she's like a like highly valued like a healer. Like that's something that like every party needs, but she can't do it anymore because she's just so messed up by what happened, like seeing all those people die, and just like not being able to like save everyone else, and like, or she didn't have like the power to stand up for herself either. But when Jinwoo gets to see her or whatever, he like reassures her like, oh, you did nothing wrong, like you did everything right. It's not your fault that those people died. Stuff like that just happens. That's just how messed up the world is right now. And like, yeah, like that's good. People in those situations need to hear that kind of stuff. And like the chairman of the Hunter Association, that's also like a really good relationship that I like. He's like this older man who's, he's been embroiled in like those hunter politics for a long time. But seeing Jin Woo is like a breath of fresh air because he's so unaccustomed to it. And like, just, he's just vibing. He's doing his thing. And Chairman Gun-hee is, Go Gun-hee, I think his name. He's just like, yeah kid, just, you do you. Okay. I'm just going to cover for you because we need this new blood to like shake things up and stuff. And Jin Woo's like, you got it, boss. And like, yeah, I love that. I think it's really smart in the way that the character relationships are handled.
Yeah, I agree. I really think like the relationship you mentioned with, I think it was Juhi at the beginning with her, like the kind of PTSD reaction she has to the double dungeon. It's such an important way that they handle that I think it's very well done. And I would also add some other things that come up later in the series that are spoilery, like his relationship with his father, how that pans out, as well as a story from the epilogue involving a girl that commits suicide. How those are handled are very well done to me.
Yeah, agreed for sure. So yeah, is Solo Leveling good? It blew up for a reason.
There's a reason it's a worldwide phenomena. There's a reason why whenever someone talks about manhwa, that's one of the first things that people, it rolls off the tongue. It's because you just equate it with it now. It's so well known, so popular, and for a good reason.
Yeah, look, first things first, as a short, snappy title, the artwork is amazing. I think that's really all you need for mainstream success, like something that's like very easy to digest. But besides that, like we said, like there's all these other good points to it. And it holds up. I feel like the best thing about it is like the pacing.
Yeah.
These arcs are not like super long and like protracted. Like they don't last longer than they need to. And like, yeah, they might be formulaic at some point. It's just like, oh yeah, new area, fight, 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 then boss fight. And then like, okay, in between arcs is like the One Piece thing where it's just like, oh, we see what's going on around the world and shit like that. But then like, yeah. And then it repeats. But you know what? If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
The major breaks in Solo Leveling are when it talks more about the political aspects of the whole system with the guild, or learning how to use the physical like HUD system that Jinwoo has to use, or understanding the giant gate that might destroy the entire world, you know, things like that.
Yeah, all the world building stuff is what happens in between, which is like, yeah, people love that. And having it in like in part in like little spurts in between, I think that's the best way to keep your audience engaged, because you're not like completely lore dumping everything and having like just monologues and monologues of like, and this is what happened in the world in the year 5 years ago, and then this is how this affected this part of the country and this stuff. And I'm just like, that shit is so dry. Instead, Solo Leveling does a lot of show don't tell, and it works for that. And I think we should have talked a little bit about the people behind it. So originally, Solo Leveling was a web novel by the author Chu Gong. And the comic version is done by Dubu at Redai Studio, which is they're known for a lot of action series. You might have heard something like I'm the Max Level Newbie or The Worn and Torn Newbie. Those are both action. One of them is like fantasy. The other is like a kind of like an MMORPG one. It's cool stuff. And
that makes this one very much like a hybrid of the two in a way.
Yeah, kind of. Because it has the system and then the fantasy shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, last year in July 2022, the artist suffered from a cerebral hemorrhage and passed away. It was really sad. I remember when the news broke and everyone was just like completely shocked because I think they were still pretty young. Like they were still like at the peak of their career, and then for that to happen, it was just very tragic.
I think that was also right around the same time that they announced that the anime was happening as well.
Yeah, so that was just like at the peak of like Solo Leveling fever. It's very unfortunate, but I do remember like there's like a message put out by the studio, and like I think there were like tribute artworks made by other artists. I think I might have to look for that, and maybe we can link it. But yeah, and then the adaptation of the story into comic form is done by someone named H. Goon, and in English right now, all the chapters available digitally are available in English on Tabbytoon, Tapas, Pocket Comics, maybe another publisher too, but I'm not sure off the top of my head. And it's also available in print by Eyes Press, which is an imprint of Yen Press, who publishes a lot of manga and light novels. So this is like their venture into Korean territory, which is really exciting. And yeah, volumes 1-6 cover around the first 97 chapters, which is actually, doesn't season 1 end like chapter 100 or 100 something?
Somewhere around that, yeah.
Yeah, so like that's perfect for getting into like the first half of the story. It's only six books.
The end of volume 6 is when they first get to Jeju Island, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a good point for that cutoff right there.
Yeah, oh yeah, the Chimera Antar for you Hunter Hunter fans. yeah, and it seems that the 7th volume is due for release in August, and the Empress also releases the novel through their imprint called Yen On, and I do know that they also have audiobooks for that. They should be available. I know that they're on Bookwalker, but they should also be on like Audible and I guess like Google Play and iTunes. So if you're into audiobooks too, you can listen to the novel. I forgot who was the narrator, but I do believe it's a Korean American too, which is pretty cool. Oh yeah, and as we mentioned, there's an anime coming out next year in 2024. I believe the studio is A1 Pictures, and Crunchyroll is one of the major sponsors on the committee. We've gotten 2 teaser trailers so far. And everyone's excited. This is the one series where everyone's like, this needs to be animated. This has to be like the first like big manhwa anime, and which is like, it still has the chance for that, because we got Tower of God and God of High School, and people did not really like those adaptations because they were like super rough. A lot of stuff riding on this. Well, hopefully it's good. It's successful. It might be successful even if it's not.
Both of the teasers have looked amazing for it so far.
I think I only saw the first one, so I gotta see the second one. But I mean, I think this is good. The fact that it was announced, I think like last year, and there's still like another year for production to carry on is a good sign. I've seen a lot of dumpster fires happen in the Japanese side of anime, like freaking One Punch Man season 2. It was like announced 6 months before it aired. And like, I think the first trailer came out like maybe a couple weeks before the first episode came out, and it was just, oh god, when you see stuff like that, that's how you know that there's a lot of problems going on the production side in terms of like management and like making sure everything is like getting produced. like I don't know, it's messy, but this is a good sign in my opinion. The fact that we still have like a whole year ahead of us. And there's also a mobile game that was announced. And yeah, it's called Solo Leveling Arise. There was actually a press release in March. The developer is going to be a company named Netmarble. And yeah, they seem to be a mobile game publisher. And it's supposed to be like a faithful reproduction of the original webtoon series, and it's gonna have I guess like a story mode, but it's also like an action RPG. I'm assuming like what they're going for is like a Final Fantasy VII remake type of like dynamic combat in terms of like 3D gameplay and like there's like RPG elements, but the action is in real time. And yeah, they're gonna, it looks like they're planning on having a lot of the main characters like Jinwoo, Chahein, Jinwoo's friend, Jinho, and probably more. I saw on their website, the official website that they had, they had some stills from the game in development, and they showed that one like snake boss from the very first dungeon that he went into after the double dungeon in like the subway, where he got like the Snake Man dagger or whatever. I forgot what it was called. I think the snake started with like a K or something. But yeah, it looks really exciting. The art style reminds me of Genshin Impact. It's kind of cel shaded, and yeah, I mean, I play mobile games. I'm probably gonna play this too.
It definitely looks like one that I'll pick up. I can only imagine having to build myself a shadow army, and I'm sold.
Yeah, and I guess we could talk about Jinwoo's powers. So like, eventually, once he reaches like level 50, I think he goes through like a class change quest, and it's like a challenge where he has to survive for a certain amount of time, or like defeat all the enemies, and he gets bonus rewards depending on his performance. And like, because he completely exceeds expectations of the system, he gets his job change with like an extra perk. Like he's like a rank above what he's normally supposed to be or whatever. And what else is he supposed to be if he's gonna be a solo leveler, if not a necromancer? And he gets to like revive like monsters and people that he kills with like shadow powers, basically. And like he makes his own party full of like these shadow creatures and stuff to tackle all these dungeons. It's really cool. I think the way that they draw the shadows are so cool, and I love the fact that they change the hue. Like it's like a black shadow, but they also have like colors like a dark blue, or later on when he gets even stronger they turn like purple, and like it's just, you know, it looks so sick. I love it. They look like flames, but they're black, and like my inner 8th grade edgelord is like in love with this shit.
Well, not only like just the effects of the shadows, but how it also translates onto Jinwoo as well. So like on his twin daggers that he carries through much of the series, the mana and the shadows come off of those as well, and it creates this kind of like gorgeous effect along the side of them, and it really highlights the sheen of the metal. Mm-hmm. And then one of the very like key images throughout the series, and it's even like on the title card of the anime, and the first like image you see from like any of the promotional art from the manhwa is this kind of like shadowed look from his eye as well.
Yeah, and I really like how the detail on like his eyes or whatever change, and like at some point like they become like they have like the silver glow, but then when it changes to like purple also when he like ranks up or whatever, it also looks really cool. And it has like this intimidation factor, but it's also just like half the time I think it's just pure aesthetic.
I love the glow factor on it. It reminds me so much of on Fire Force, the way that like the reflective glow from their jackets. Mm. It's that same kind of hue to it.
Yeah. Or even just like when you see like in a random action anime sometimes where it's like someone's in the zone, and like there's like these trails of light following their eyes, almost like the Akira bike when it's like moving, and you see like the trails of light and shit.
Well, and it also like it calls so much more attention to where Jinwoo or whichever other hunter is being featured, where their gaze lies and what is really the focus of the conversation, and their tone is like projected in it as well.
Yeah, that's true. Because everyone has like some level of like aura. Like at some point the hunters that we see, as everyone just gets stronger and stronger, and like the monsters also get stronger, we're just introduced to like these super powerhouse characters, and they all have like their own presence and like the way that they carry themselves and stuff. It's reflected in like the body language, and also the way that they like wield their power, like the mana and like the energy coming out of them and stuff. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, we talked about how the Jeju Island raid is like basically the end of the first half. Basically, there's two seasons, quote unquote, which is what a lot of manhwa use in terms of like breaking up, I guess, like parts of the manga or the comic. So like after like this story arc that like leads up to like a climax and like a change in the climate of the story, they take a break and they come back. And that's where I think most of the nitty gritty of like the world building and the lore kicks in, because we start getting answers for like why did Jinwoo acquire like this system and become like this necromancer with like super strong powers and shit, and like why him? I guess we could probably ease into like the spoiler territory.
Yeah. I mean, just diving right into spoiler zone here now. I would agree that the Jeju raid is like the big turning point for the story. At the beginning, like it's all about him figuring out how to survive in the system and to progressively level himself up to not be a weak hunter anymore and go from a Class E to being a reawakened no cap rig S. And then when it comes time to do the Jeju raid, he's got so many other things going on in his life, whether it's with his mom or his sister, but he's acquired some shadows at that point and he's feeling confident. But he's not signed up to go to the Jeju raid. There's other national hunters that are signed up to appear there. Mm-hmm. But he still ends up going because it's going horribly wrong. And he knows that he can solve it. And turns out that there's this really powerful shadow, as expected, at the Jeju Island raid that we come to know as Beru, or later in the series, that becomes one of the shadow soldiers. But that whole scene is just a huge kickoff for all the intense politics on a global scale of the hunter system.
Yeah, it's like the first real introduction of like international hunters, because Jeju Island is like so close to Japan, and this leads to like the threat of like these monsters in Jeju Island. Japan has to step in also just to make sure that these monsters don't cross the sea and come over and like invade Japan and stuff. So. That's where we start getting the politics. What was that?
And also the fact that the Japanese hunter Goto Ryuji is like trying to become a national level hunter, and in order to become a national level hunter, you have to participate in like an international scale raid.
Yeah. And Ryuji, his like, when he gets introduced, it's like, oh, all these Japanese hunters, they look so badass and cool and shit. And then, but then we see, like, oh, some of them are pretty arrogant. And, like, they might be a little stuck up. I was going to say racist, but, like, they're not, like, overtly racist. But I've noticed that, like, a bunch of these comics, whenever it comes to, like, international relations, Japan is kind of shitty sometimes in terms of, like, how they treat Koreans.
That character definitely was a very condescending style character.
Yeah. But then it's, you know what? Half the time I feel like they do it just for moments like these when he finally meets Jinwoo, and Jinwoo puts him in his place. It's just like, yeah, you had that coming.
It went from being like a friendly match to becoming it pops up, the system message pops up in front of Jinwoo and is like, there's an intent to kill you. It's no longer a friendly match.
Yeah, and knowing Jinwoo, like, he's been facing death this whole series, and when it comes to something like that, he's not one to take that lying down. And yeah, of course he's going to retaliate. Whether that spells good or bad for, like, the Korean hunters, he's just, like, at this point, he's still just, like, looking out for himself. He's not really involved or invested, I think, in, like, Korea as a whole. Even though, like, he's getting strong enough now to the point where he's becoming the face of the country. But not quite, because people don't really know who he is like that. But after this arc, basically, that's where everyone, like, learns, like, oh, yeah, this is the guy who was like basically save the raid from being a failure. Like there were so many casualties on both sides from the like the Japanese and the Korean hunters, to the point where like several S class S rank hunters, class S hunters were like they were casualties and stuff. Even like this one like very like a top tier healer or whatever, who was like very close with everyone, he ended up dying. And Jinwoo even like brought him back temporarily to like save some of the survivors, like Cha Hae-in.
I mean, this is the first introduction to him being able to revive a recently deceased person, but as a shadow in his army. And so that's a new skill that he acquires in the JJ raid that becomes important throughout the series as well.
Yeah, and it's like it opens up like a moral quandary where it's just like, is it right to revive people, to make them into your shadow soldiers? Like up to this point, he's only revived monsters, and like commanding monsters to kill other monsters. Yeah, that's fine. But then like, we learned that because I forgot his name, I'm so sorry, but the S rank healer, like he still had his intelligence and he could like speak and stuff. And he brought up that like he was afraid of the fact that like, yeah, he was brought back, but what he felt was like unbridled loyalty and like a feeling of wanting to serve his master for being brought back and stuff. And like every person that Jinwoo would like revive like that will have to go through that. And like, is that the right thing to do? Like at that point, like that's like completely erasing free will. Like you could just kill someone and bring them back against their will, and like they'll just have to serve you for the rest of their existence. Like that's kind of crazy.
And I think that goes back to something that we were talking about earlier about the kind of empathy and compassion that Jinwoo embodies, is that he understands that certain people aren't meant for that in his shadow army. Like he releases that healer back into the afterlife after another healer or another hunter talks to him and says like, let him move on in peace with his life. And the same thing happens later on in the series with other characters that he revives as well. But then other people that have wronged him, for example, a hunter that seeks revenge on him, at that point, like, no, you're a shadow soldier and that's what you get.
Oh yeah, Dongsuk. That was crazy because there was a buildup to that. Back to, I would say like around like chapter 30-ish, where he was like still under the radar and doing dungeon raids like solo. And just like joining as like a miner or excavator to bring out like mana stones and stuff. That was how he met his friend Jinho. They were like a group led by like this really big scammer who would bring in newbies and kill them and like take the spoils of the raid. And he was the older brother of this S rank Korean who ended up defecting to America, which his name was I think it was Hwang Dong Suk. And yeah, he's just like a mega asshole. Both the brothers are two peas in a pod, super evil, basically. Or not evil, but like they just suck. And when Jinwoo goes to America, Dong Suk like is aware, and he's just like, "Oh, you're the guy who killed my brother." Or like on paper, like it was an accident, but like it was definitely you because you're the one survivor. It was you who did it. And then he like retaliates by kidnapping Jinho and like torturing him and threatening him. And Jinwoo was like, "Yeah, I'm not having that. You're gonna die." And he dies. And he gets brought back as what was the name? He came up with like a shadow name for him.
I can't quite remember, but I know it was comical. It was just kind of like something really generic.
It's just like a one word like a generic like tank or something. Not tank.
Yeah, like it wasn't even like an actual name. It was just more of like a position.
Like a position or an object or something.
Yeah. Like at one point he starts like accumulating some shadows and he's like, "You know what? You're going to be number one. You're going to be number two."
Yeah, I think the only one who got like a real name was Igris. And then everyone else is just like, there was the orc named Tusk. There was this horned bear or some shit named Tank. And then the, yeah, I don't know. It's silly. There's comedy in the series.
Like the three strongest Shadow Soldiers, the commanders or generals, so to speak, they all have, like, official names that you hear all the time, like Bellion, Ignis, and Beru. But the other ones are all just, like, throwaway craziness that he just, like, needs to give them a name because the system tells him to.
Right.
But then there's also, like some you said, are comical. And then I think the dragon that they brought back as well had a name, but I can't remember that at the moment.
Was it like Cashiel or something? I think it was like... Yeah, it's like he revived a wyvern, and he named it Kaisel. And it's like... it's a giant wyvern. It's not a dragon, because dragons have like wings and four legs or whatever. But yeah, I think he got it from this one dungeon where it was like the Demon King's Tower. Which was, I think it was the arc right before.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
But, he acquired him, like, from the Demon Lord's Tower, which was, like, a dungeon right before Jeju Island. And, it becomes his, like, major or primary form of transport after.
I mean, it's convenient, although his shadow transfer or transport, I can't remember the exact word he uses, becomes extremely helpful, especially as he levels up even further.
Yeah, because I think the cooldown is, like, depending on the level, it starts at, like, every 3 hours or something.
Yeah.
And then it eventually gets stronger. That's a thing. Transport or taking the place of where one of your shadows is, like, that's broken as hell. I love that. It's such a cool ability. And he can also, like, assign his shadow soldiers to protect the people he cares about, so they'll, like, hide in another person's shadow, like his little sister or maybe the chairman and stuff like that. And
somebody might see, like, a little ripple in their shadow as they're walking by.
Yeah, that's really cool. Oh, and one of the major reasons, you know, for Jinwoo to continue getting stronger or whatever was finding a way to cure his mom. And he actually gets that thanks to the system. I forget how it led up into it, but basically he got like an elixir, I think, or like some kind of concoction made from like the materials of these things that he got from the dungeons he conquered. And he got that to basically, it cured his mom. And she woke up from her coma, and it was actually, like, very heartwarming. It was a very sweet moment, and something that I felt was, like, sorely needed at that point of the story. Because at that point, it was just where we were just getting a lot of, like, oh, yeah, Jinwoo was super badass, and he's just, like, the most stoic guy ever. And, like, yeah, but we got to remember that he's still human. Like, no matter how, like, abnormal his powers are and, like, how much he stands out, like, there's still the person underneath all that.
Yeah, I thought it was important that he also used that on Jinho's father later in the series. He specifically tells him that he doesn't have a cure, he can't fix his pending eternal slumber. Then, as a birthday present to Jinho, he does it because he sees that his friend is just distraught over it, and he'll do what he takes to be there for his friend.
Yeah, I like that too, because it's a good fake out, because usually they reserve moments and stories like that for something maybe not at that level of stakes. Like, when it comes to, like the actual life of another person, usually we wouldn't get that, like, will he, won't he, or whatever. Like, it'll just be straight up, like, oh, yeah, or no, I won't help. But having him go get back on that and just help him out anyway after seeing Jinho is like, that was very nice.
So moving into some of the more like technical aspects of the series, one thing that we learn about is where the system comes from. And so at one point, Jinwoo ends up going back to Cardinon Temple. He's summoned there from a quest from the system. And the architect tests him in the double dungeon. And turns out that the architect is the one who built the system. But he's not in control of the system anymore. It's something he created and is beyond his power later on.
Yeah, at some point... yeah, I think when Jinwoo like interacts with him and stuff, and we actually find out that the source of his powers is actually the Shadow Monarch, and there's this whole thing with like monarchs and I forgot what the other faction is called, but
the rulers.
The rulers, monarch rulers, is the same shit. But
different words for kings.
Yeah, right. But we find out that Jinwoo was actually selected or like chosen by the original Shadow Monarch due to his like tenacity and like his outlook on life. Basically, like he was somewhat of like a similar temperament to the original Shadow Monarch. And he's just like, you know what? I think you're the right guy. I'm going to give you my heart, basically. And it's like a mana heart or something. Basically the source of like his powers, and the reason that the system was built or like put into place was so that Jinwoo could actually develop those powers and grow into it instead of like completely destroying his body immediately because under the like the stress of like he can't handle all this like immediately. And honestly, yeah, like when I first saw that, I'm like, that's kind of convoluted. But I understand it. I didn't think it was, like, bad or anything. I just thought it was, like, I don't know. But I think I made peace with it. I'm like, you know what, this is fine. It felt, like, a little clunky in the moment when I was reading it weekly. But then I'm like, you know what, this is fine. It's whatever. I like that a lot of... okay, jumping way further. At some point, like, after Jinwoo completely unlocks all the Shadow Monarch's powers, and he gets to, like, recall... the original army that went up against the rulers, and like they have their memories of their first monarch or whatever, but then like they see like traces of him inside Jinwoo, and I'm like, oh, this is really badass. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, the whole feud between the monarchs and the rulers, when I first started uncovering that through reading, it was a little confusing, and then as I kept reading it, I realized it was meant to be confusing because, mm-hmm. like, for Jinwoo, it was supposed to be confusing. He didn't know which side he belonged to, and he had to figure that out and figure the system out and where his place was throughout it. And so the confusion for the reader was also because of the confusion for Jinwoo, and it seemed very intentional at that point. And once it's all revealed, it's no longer confusing.
Yeah, it's like it's meant to disorient the reader. So, like, the rulers are basically these entities that you can think of them like angels or, like, beings, like, close to God or, like, the creator of the universe. And the monarchs are kind of like rebels, I guess. Like, I think at some point they like, disagreed with the way that stuff was being handled. And they're like, no, fuck this. We're going to do our own thing. And, well, that was my understanding of it when I read it a while ago. I should have reread it, but I did not, because I thought it would be cooler to have someone who's, like, caught up, like, recently, and then for me to, like, riff off that. But basically, they're, like, feuding. And the Shadow Monarch, he kind of rebelled against the Monarchs, but he also was like, fuck the rulers, too. And he was just, like a rogue. Yeah, he was just a rogue, and he ended up defecting, and like it was a very long flashback, but seeing the way that like he completely like influenced the tide of the battle once he showed up because of his powers of like yeah, like after he killed all those, all these like angels and demons and shit and all these different armies, he just revived them and added them to his own shadow army. Like, that was crazy. And it's just like, this is like one of the most broken powers ever.
Well, they also made it clear, very clear, that the power of the monarchs and the rulers is so far above just regular S-class hunters, which are like the strongest hunters that exist. They did that by showing an immediate brutal murder of the American national hero, Christopher Reed. The rulers showed up and just destroyed him.
Yeah, didn't he have like a fragment of one of the rulers?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, so he was like partially, he had like a partial piece of power of the, one of the rulers. Was it like the fragment of Brilliant Light or something?
Yes.
Yeah, so in order to see how actually powerful these beings are, like we got to see how someone who's supposed to be like a subordinate just gets completely washed.
And I think it's also important to discuss how Jinwoo's father actually comes back into this. So after being gone for much of Jinwoo's life, he reappears in the story and turns out he's been with the rulers the whole time. So in that, he realizes that his son is a target, but then the most brilliant light decides, no, you need to protect him. And Jinwoo's father is like, no, everything in Korea that's going on, this is my area, don't you dare touch it.
Yeah.
And the way that he comes back into his life, it's, you'd think that Jinwoo would have all this anger and hatred from his father, like seemingly abandoning them throughout their life or just disappearing. But the way that he just kind of melts away and accepts that what the role that his father fell into because of what he knows and what he's been through in the past, like, few months that happens in this comic, it's very cathartic and rewarding.
Yeah, I think it's handled really well, especially because, like, you both, I mean, you know that both have gone through, like, so much, and, like, the fact that when Jinwoo's father shows up, he's, like, taken into custody and treated almost like a specimen or whatever, and because of, like, the circumstances, Jinwoo is also treated like a potential traitor to humanity, and instead of just, like, kind of lashing out at his father for that, he's just like, nah, man, I know what politics is like. This is fucked up. You've been through some shit, and I've also been through some shit.
He gets it.
Yeah, like, yeah, Dad, I grew up. I get it. I respect that a lot, because I feel like it's so easy to cop out and, like, just go the route of, like, oh, for more emotional catharsis, it's just, like, have, like, a screaming match or, you know, like, people just completely yell out all their emotions or whatever, and, like, yeah, this is not that kind of comic, even if it's, like, it takes a lot of, like, tropes and, like, other, I guess, like, writing habits from, like, other, like, action series, like, it still manages to mold itself into its own identity. Is there something else you want to talk about the plot, or do you want to jump into, like, the epilogue?
Well, I mean, most of the plot points that are really important we've talked about. I think it is important to also talk about the current epilogue chapters and some of the things that are uncovered in that, as well as how we feel about the ending of the main story before epilogue.
I forgot to talk to you.
Because that's a choice.
That is true. Oh, yeah. So, at the end of the main story, Jinwoo decides to basically, all right, go back in time. Before this whole dungeon business, this whole dimensional rift, all these things with the rulers and the monarchs, like, fucking up Earth.
Yeah, he uses the cup of reincarnation from the most brilliant light.
Basically, hit the big old reset button. Because the world is fucked up right now. The world needs healing. And the way to do that is just, let's just do some things over. And he chooses to go back. He retains all his memories, but no one else remembers that timeline, basically, and, like, what he did to save everyone, and, like, the way that he protected Earth, and, like, saved all these different people from different countries, from different outbreaks. All this influence that he got from wielding his power for the sake of others. And he decides, I'm just going to do this again, but from the shadows, where I always was. And I'm going to do this, like, outside of the, outside of, like, watching eyes and, like, just take care of things so that other people can just live on with their lives. And, yeah, it was an ending. I feel like it was very, when people first read it, they're like, oh, what the fuck? This is not what I expected. I thought I was waiting for, like, badass Sung Jin-woo to, like, finally get the girl and, like, live it up and, like, everyone loves him and everything. And it's just like, nope.
I will say, if it wasn't for the epilogue chapters, I would have been very upset with that ending.
I'll tell you this, like, I read the web novel. I read through, like, a really shitty, like, Google translation. Because the web novel was free. And I was just like, I want to see what happens. And, like, when I read the ending, I'm like, what the fuck? Then I was like, oh, there are epilogue chapters? Yeah, this kind of soured my mood. I kind of don't want to read more. Because I felt like, for the longest time, like, after, at what point in the story was, I think it was, like, right after where he meets Joo-hee in, like, chapter, like, 40 or 30 or whatever, like, after the assassin incident. And, like, it's, like, decided that, like, oh, yeah, she's not going to be a love interest or whatever. That Jin-woo is, in the comic, is kind of, like, portrayed as, like, oh, yeah, he's the Stone Cold badass. He is, like, a man's man. He is the kind of character that the people who read Berserk and call it, like, a manime, he's, like, a character aimed at those people. Where it's just, like, the people who are, like, they watch Fight Club and they completely miss the point.
I haven't heard that term manime before, but I love it. Continue.
Basically, he's supposed to be like the ultimate, like, badass self-insert. Yeah, it's just like a self-insert. Like, it's like a power fantasy, basically. And then this ending completely shits on that, because the whole point of a power fantasy is, in my opinion, to just like, yeah, it's like a self-insert, and you're supposed to feel, like, elated because, oh yeah, this character is doing everything that I couldn't, and I'm getting, like, vicarious enjoyment out of it, basically. And because Jin-woo doesn't get that kind of, like, outward, like, affirmation from other people in that ending, it just completely shat all over that. And for that reason, I respect it. But also, it's just like, come on, you built the whole story up in a certain way, and then you just pull the rug.
They completely destroyed everything that you had read, essentially. All the relationships that had been built, all of the levels he had acquired, all of his shadow soldiers, gone. Nobody remembers him. Nobody knows everything that he's done for the world. And the only people that ever will are the rulers that still exist, or some of the monarchs, or things like that.
Yeah.
Well, actually, not even the monarchs, because he goes back and finds the monarchs.
Yeah, people like outside the influence of, like, time and shit.
Yeah. So just the rulers, and not the hunters that have a piece of the rulers in them, but just the, like, the high tier rulers. They're the only ones that know what happened, and they're not even on the regular plane of Earth. Mm-hmm. And so just rewriting that whole story from being a child, and he's now also immortal and can fluctuate his age based on what people want him to look like at that time. It's insane.
Yeah. It's crazy. I was just like, what the fuck? Oh, I felt like, at least the way the comic portrayed it was a little more palatable. Like, I didn't have as much of a, like a sour taste in my mouth reading the comic version than I did the novel. But it was still just like, I don't know, man, all this buildup, and it was like an anticlimax almost. Yeah, I don't know. But
the epilogue.
Yeah, the epilogue, like, maybe it was a good thing I didn't read it, because then I got to experience the comic version. But, like, it did exactly what I wanted, which is, like, follow up with these other characters that, like, I cared about. Like, the second chairman, I forgot his name.
Wu Jin-chul.
Yes, Wu Jin-chul. Jin-chul, he he was like the second in command to Gogun Hee, and
now he's a beat cop.
Now he's a beat up cop.
Because hunters don't exist anymore in this universe or this timeline, and Jinwoo is now a high schooler on the track team. And Chaheyan is also on the track team, which is why Jinwoo was on the track team, so he can get back to her and meet her in this new timeline.
Honestly, that was very bold.
Yeah, that is very bold, and it worked apparently. But well, also we talked about, I think it was, forgive me if I mess up her name, it was Jihoo or Joohee, the healer at the beginning. Yes, so she is now like working at a hospital, but yeah. He doesn't talk to her at all, and they don't she doesn't recognize him. But I also think it's very soothing that there's like these moments where people are like, have I met you before? And if he has a choice to give them their memories of him back and what happened. And I think he does a really good job with that for both Wu Jinchul and Chairman Go Gun-hee, as far as like giving them those memories and allowing them to share that moment with him.
Yeah, I honestly, that's the catharsis that I needed. I needed like these characters acknowledging the fact that like, yeah, Jinwoo, you fucking did that. Yes, you did it. Thank you. And also, damn it, that was so fucked up.
Yes. But also, like, I really like some of the different choices that they make throughout the epilogue. Firstly, mm-hmm. now as after it like ages up, Jinwoo, he's no longer a high schooler. He is married to Hunter, or no longer Hunter, but Chai Heian, and he's his own like beat cop working under Wu Jinchul, and he's a very successful cop because he uses his shadows that he still has. And, like, at the very beginning, I mentioned there's a case where he works, that there's a girl who commits suicide, and that's due to some abuse from a stepfather. And I think the way that they handle that and him arising her spirit, it's very satisfying in resolving a crime that happened to her that nobody understood. But at the same time, he also made it sound like it was a homicide instead. So I was a little torn on how he resolved that in the end. But I was glad that the truth came out about that particular case and how he handles his cases with his shadows.
Yeah, I agree. Honestly, like, it's very good. I feel like if you read the series and you had some kind of, like, disappointment or maybe expectations that weren't met by the actual ending, the epilogue does a great job of, like, recontextualizing everything and or just continuing. Picking up where it left off and seeing like what happens after. Like, yeah, like whenever Jinwoo like physically touches people who were like, I guess, shared important memories with him, they get to like recall what happened in the other timeline. And like seeing that happen and getting their emotional reactions on screen is like, I love that. Cause like I said, it brings catharsis. It allows people to grieve, to like process exactly like what they went through. And because like up to that point, it just felt like everything got erased and like almost like there were no consequences. People couldn't feel the weight of the decisions that were made because of the end of the series. And like now it's like, oh no, people actually get to completely understand what happened and like talk about it. Like I feel like that's what I needed the most out of it. I needed people like understanding exactly what he did so that his decisions feel like it actually had weight behind it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that the epilogue also has a couple other interesting points. For example, there's a single like one-shot chapter about the Monarch of Dragons, and he somehow ends up in the beginning of the story, Jinwoo's body. And like he is getting chastised for being late, and he is so upset about this that he's just like, I can't take this embarrassment. What do you mean I'm late? And he just like appears all of a sudden. And it's such a comical just like side note, but it's a way to just kind of like provide that comic relief for a villain that was around for quite a while in the main story. But the bigger point of the epilogue is a setup for the spinoff. So the spinoff that got announced for Solo Leveling, and I think has started now, is Solo Leveling Ragnarok. And that's all about Jinwoo and...
Suho?
Yeah, it was about Suho, but I was trying to recall her name. Chahaeyon.
Oh, like, and, yeah.
Their child together, which is Suho. And he's like the little monarch, according to the Shadow Soldiers.
I love that.
And he has the ability to fly and has somehow inherited some of Jinwoo's powers. But it shows him like growing up as a teenager and then later into high school. And as he is growing into these powers and becoming a little monarch of his own, it kind of undoes some of the parts that were taken away at the end of the story, like the idea of monsters and gates and all these dungeons, because he gets sucked into one himself as a teenager now. And his memories are taken from him by Jinwoo, so he won't remember that he can fly or have all these abilities or the Shadow Soldiers. But now he has an opportunity to be in the system and level up himself. And he has a little phrase that he says, like, knives are cliche, men fight with their fists, and he becomes a brawler instead of a knife wielder. That's really amusing.
I love that. I love the fact that he's like, he uses gauntlets and fists and shit to fight.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do think it's interesting, where Solo Leveling Ragnarok is going to go. Chugong, who wrote the original Solo Leveling story, is also writing the spinoff, so hopefully it'll be good. We don't really know yet, beyond what has been kind of shown in epilogue chapters about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting to see where it goes. A lot of people are really worried about whether it's going to be similar to like a Naruto, the Boruto situation. but I don't see it quite ending up that way. I think it'll be better than that. And I think that there was like a quote in chapter 191 that kind of set this up that I loved so much, which was, everything has a beginning, arises from that end. And like, Arise is such a powerful word throughout the series because of the Shadow Soldiers. But
yeah, that's the phrase he uses to resurrect shadows, basically, from dead corpses.
Yes. And like, to use that in that quote as like the end of the story but a beginning of a new one, it felt so good to me.
Yeah, it's really satisfying. And like, I like what they did too with like the reason Suho's powers were sealed was because like he inherited like his mana and like aura basically from like his father, but he was like unaware of it and couldn't control it, and to the point where like other kids were like terrified of him, even though like he's just like a normal like 3-year-old, 4-5-year-old or whatever, because they had like, I think like kids have like heightened senses basically to like the paranormal and shit, at least that's usually how it goes. And and yeah, he was like befriending all the Shadow Soldiers, like Beru, Igris, and everyone else. And like, now with the way that Suho now has like the system unlocked to like get stronger and stuff, I took that as like, either Jinwoo or like, I don't know, is the architect a shadow or not? Maybe he is. But
no,
like
the architect was a puppet.
A puppet? Okay. They did something with like, I feel like the whole reason that Suho is going through this now, and basically he's just fighting all the Shadow Soldiers that Jinwoo has in order of like how he recruited them, is so that he gets used to his powers, and like maybe there won't be like an immediate threat that he has to face, but it's so that he can like inherit his legacy without basically like Suho is like, yeah, he's going through the doldrums, and he's like, he feels that there's something off with his life. He realizes that there's something missing, like he's just bored, and like he's strong, but like there's something missing, and something about his life doesn't add up. And yeah, it's the fact that his powers are sealed, and like there's like a whole side of him that he isn't really aware of because of that. And being able to like control his powers, unlock that for him, and it also, it's part of like accepting yourself, and like it's like another coming of age thing. I feel like
Oh, no, you're fine. I think I agree with what you're saying. It's a good restart using Suho. The way that he inherits his powers and the way that he's rediscovering it is very interesting. And I think that they do a good job of tying it back to original characters as well. For example, when he's going through and start initially leveling up, he comes across the different commanders. And So like he faces Ignis in the first double dungeon and just like dies immediately. And he's like, okay, that's not going to work. I need to try something else. And so they like, the system is working under Jinwoo now, and it's testing him and making him level up and learn how to be a Shadow Monarch and how to fight on his own. And he, like, when he fights Beru, Beru's just like a sobbing mess because he remembers spending so much time with him as a kid, but Suho doesn't. And it's a very, like, satisfying moment, but also very sad, like, very sad for Beru at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honestly, this epilogue did a lot. It did a lot of hard caring for me in terms of like accepting the ending as like just like the way it was executed. Because like I don't have anything like overtly against the ending. Like I said, I think it's bold, but without this focus on the side characters and just leaving it at like Jinwoo hitting like a hard reset, that just leaves such a bad taste in my mouth. Yes. And this completely just, like, this corrected it.
I agree. I absolutely would have been devastated, not recommended this to anyone if there hadn't been an epilogue.
Right. Yeah. I'm glad we got to sort that out, because now we can talk about it. we can talk about it on this podcast, and I'm sure that there plenty of you who might have like different feelings, or maybe went through the same thing, but yeah, I would love to hear anyone else's thoughts on this, because like I said, I don't really have that many people to talk to about these types of comics, and yeah, this is exactly why we started this. I think it's a good time to start signing off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, is there anything that you want to plug? Amber?
Not particularly. I mean, I know that if anyone's trying to reach me to talk about manhwa, you can reach me on any of my social channels under ARG Bombshell or ARG Bombshell. And I'm sure, Marion, you have ways that people can reach you as well.
Yeah. I have a personal Twitter at Michael Wavy, used before the V. And on my about there, I have like a link with all my other projects. I have other podcasts. Sometimes I talk about manga. Sometimes I write about it. I write for Toonami Faithful, Comics Beat. I have a personal blog too. You can find that all at ToonamiFaithful.com, ComicsBeat.com, and HeavensDoorknob.wordpress.com. And yeah, if you want to find more episodes as they come out of Soju Want to Read Manhwa, you can follow our socials. I made a Twitter account at Soju Manhwa Pod, and we have an email if you want to email us suggestions or maybe write a more long form comment or question. That's at SojuWantToReadManhwa@gmail.com. And
please send us in your questions and comments and feedback so we can improve and get better as we go.
Of course, yeah. And
and recommendations, of course.
Yeah, and totally. We're definitely open to that. We're both omnivores. We read all kinds of stuff. So
of course.
We're definitely open to it. And yeah, you can find this podcast anywhere podcasts are found. Just do us a favor. If you like this, give us a rating, a like, or share, whatever. And spread the word, because we're new in town.
We're new in town. There's not a lot of people talking specifically about manhwa, and we're here for it. So do you want to read manhwa? We do.
We do. God, I love that title.
We have one more thing to do.
Oh, what is it?
We have the scale. Yeah, we have to rate this.
Oh, God. Yeah, I forgot. I came up with this ingenious rating system. hold on. I have to scroll back up to see
what the fuck I wrote. Yes, it's a ways back. I don't remember the exact terms we used.
All right. So, on a scale of Bibim Flop to Bulgogi. What would you rate this series? I think it's clear. This is a Bulgogi.
This is absolutely a Bulgogi.
God, oh, I love that shit.
But if there wasn't an epilogue, it would be a Bibim flop.
Honestly, you know what? It would be Zhenzheng mid.
Okay.
Just I'll mid. Take it. We can't completely erase it.
That's fair. You know, I will give you that. I will give you the mid. Because
it doesn't the art is so fantastic,
it'll carry it.
Yeah. You got it. All right. Do us a favor. If you like those terms, start using it. I'm going to make this a thing. It's going to enter the lexicon.
Yeah. We'll hashtag it up.
Yeah.
Bibim flop, a Bulgogi. Yeah. And I think you said Zhenzheng mid.
Yes, Zhenzheng mid.
We'll do this.
Yeah.
Thank you everyone for tuning in and listening to us. And we hope you had fun listening to us talk about this awesome series, and we're going to get ready with a bunch more.
Yeah. Look forward to a business proposal next. We did one for the action fans. Now we gotta give it up for romance after, because, you know, there's just so much out there and I love everything. So do you want to read manhwa?
We do.
We do. I'll drink to that.
I'll drink to that too.
Yeah.